So unfortunately, this guy is not doing so well. He didn't live the really idealized life. And he gets up to Shemayim, and they say, look, we're really sorry. You're going to have to spend some time down there. All the way down there, you know. So he says, oy vey, so what do I do? He says, well, today you have a choice. He says, really? He says, yeah, you get to pick your Gehenim. So what's my choice? He says, you have American Gehenim, French Gehenim, and Israeli Gehenim. He says, well, what's the difference? American Gehenim, during the day, you walk around, you go to shopping malls, you go out to eat in restaurants, you go to ball games, and at midnight, they put you in the most boiling hot water you can imagine, you stay there till the morning. He says, it sounds terrible. It is. He says, what's French Gehenim? French Gehenim, you stroll along the boulevard, you eat in bistros, you go to the ballet, go to the theater, and at midnight, they put you in the most boiling hot water you can imagine, you stay there till the morning. He says, it sounds terrible. He says, it is. He says, well, what's Israeli Gehenim? Israeli Gehenim, you get up early in the morning, you work on a kibbutz, and you pick apples, and they give you a Lebanon and a pita for lunch, and in the midnight, they put you in the most boiling hot water you can imagine. He says, well, why would anyone take the Israeli Gehenim? Midnight's not exactly midnight. The water's not that hot. If you don't want, we could probably get you a schnitzel, you know what I mean? Like, you know, we work things out, you know what I mean? So this afternoon, my friends, we're in Israeli Gehenim, and I started speaking exactly at 4:45, so I'm almost done. So the truth is that every year I get this particular, not this time slot, but I get this particular topic, which is how to answer basic questions. And my wife, you know, when she looked at the fact that, you know, the 45 minutes had been cut down to 35 minutes, which now we're down to about 4 minutes, so she says, well, it's obvious, it's your own fault, because, you know, you every year stress how the most important thing when you're answering questions is to give them short answers. So they want to see how short you can make the answers. You know what I mean? So the truth of the matter is I saw we're running late, and I understand why we're running late, because given the choice, I would much rather listen to Rav Moshe Shapiro and Rav Yaakov Hillel than me. You know what I mean? And frankly, almost anybody else on this roster. The problem is that Rabbi Lazarus feels the same way. So he says, listen, that's why I put myself last. So I can give away my time, you know? Like Adam Rishon gave 70 years to David HaMelech. So evidently, I'm stealing from his time. So because here we have a disagreement that I feel that I'd much rather listen to Rabbi Lazarus than listen to me also. So each one of us is going to try to... five people slept with one blanket because each one tried to make sure the blanket went on the other person. So he's trying to give me the time to me, and I'm trying to give it back to him. So in any event, am I out of time yet? No? Okay. One more story and we're done. But anyway, every year I usually spend the majority of the time, or certainly a good portion of the time, explaining how to answer questions. And it's really very fascinating. I suggest everyone get the tape. But I'm not going to do that this year simply because of the time constraints. And, I'm sitting here speaking knowing that, you know, Rabbi Dr. Breidowitz is sitting right here waiting to speak, and Rabbi Dr. David Gottlieb is waiting to speak next. And, you know, and really I feel guilty taking the time for myself, not because I'm, you know, less interesting, but I know that I have less content. So, but that's never stopped me, which is also a very important point I want to make before I start, and that is... Many people seem to think that if I'm not a big enough Talmud Chacham, I can't do Kiruv. You know? Okay, so not everybody is going to become firm because you invited them over to your Shabbos table, you know what I mean, and gave them a good meal, and your kids are clean. If that was the case, trust me, I wouldn't have made anybody firm. But, I one week I met three people who said they get firm by coming over to my house for Shabbos. I said, you know what? I go over to my house for Shabbos every week, I still haven't become firm. You know what I mean? I said, I don't know what you saw there, you know? But the truth of the matter is that, obviously most of us are not going to be that way. We're going to be meeting people. And people become from, in my experience, because of people. They meet people. They are impressed by people. It's people. It's not the questions. People ask questions, but 9 out of 10 times they don't care about the questions. I wish I could tell you that you're going to meet the apikaris, you know, and he's going to start shooting at you Rambams and, you know, and this and that, you know. Those people don't actually exist. They're make-believe people on blogs somewhere. You'll never actually meet them, you know what I mean, who are sitting here making up sources and, you know, and bringing in all these things. You don't have to really worry about it too much. Most of the time, people are going to be impressed by you, and it's all siyata d'shmaya. I heard once from Rav Moshe Shapiro that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has decided now to bring Chelek of Klal Yisrael back. What should be the approach of the people working in Kiruv? Try not to get in Hashem's way. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is doing His thing. Stand there and make it look like you're participating. And as long as you don't do too much wrong, you'll be okay. You know? I was once working for a Kiruv organization, Kimuvan, it's not Or Sameach, that were had the philosophy that, you know, to bring people back, you can bend halacha, maybe, you know, almost to the breaking point. Maybe you don't even notice when it starts cracking, you know what I mean? And I saw them cutting corners in different areas, and I said, you know, I heard a chiddush the other day. I said, what's that? There's a God. They said, very funny. I said, no, I really mean it. You think that we have to sell that concept, but we don't really believe it. There is a Kadosh Baruch Hu, and He runs the world, and the Kadosh Baruch Hu gave us a Torah, and you're not going to bring anybody back by doing the wrong thing. You know? And our approach is going to be that if we're honest and we're right and we do what we're supposed to do, you know, you'll do better. As I have gotten older, I have realized that although you're not mechuyev to say everything, you don't say what's wrong. You know? Most of the time, you need to help the people define their questions. And by the time you're finished helping people define their questions, one thing is clear. People have no idea what their questions even are. And so therefore, you don't have to know too much. You understand? You just have to learn how to be what you already are. Annoying yeshiva guys. And say, understand, what do you mean? What do you mean? What are you trying to say? What are you saying? And people haven't the slightest idea, you know what I mean? People throw out questions to you, they have no idea what the questions are, they don't really care that much about the answers, you know? Having said that, at least for ourselves, it is extremely worthwhile to go through the questions and understand for ourselves an approach. And when you understand the true approach, then you have to boil it down and boil it down and boil it down so that you can get the essence of the answer and give it to a person to be able to define what the question is. Having said that, sometimes the answer to the question is not necessarily the... you don't have to necessarily give the whole truth. What do I mean by that? Chas v'shalom, you don't misrepresent. But you have to give the person the answer that they are basically asking. You know? What do I mean? Rav Moshe Shapiro tells a story about how one time an avreich came over to him and asked if he could share his umbrella as they're walking down the street. So the guy gets under the umbrella. They're just walking to the corner, you know? And the fellow asked Moshe, by the way, why was there a Holocaust? So Moshe says, I don't know. And he looks at the shir that he was teaching and he says, I was honest. I have no answer that I can give from here to the corner. Understand? There is no way to answer that question. Rav David Gottlieb, I saw him once in a class, somebody, you know, threw in a question, says, what about the Holocaust? And he got very upset at him, you know, and said, do not insult the memory of the 6 million Jews by trying to turn it into a soundbite and trying to, you know, knock it off at the back of your hand. You know what I mean? And try to give a 2-minute answer to something as important as the Holocaust. I have two-minute approaches to the Holocaust, and I'm not bothered by that because I don't feel like I have to give a person all the information if they're not interested. You know? Why do Jews do circumcision? It's barbaric. No, it's not. Barbarians don't do it. I had a girl once said to me, you know, why don't, you know, in the frum circles, why don't girls learn Gemara? So I said, well, the Gemara says it's tiflis. You know, which, however you want to define it, is not good. You know what I mean? So this girl says to me, it's just an Eitzah Tova. I said, so should I give someone an Eitzah Ra? She thought about that. And then she says, well, the Gemara was talking for different times and different times. It doesn't relate to our times. It's talking about different people and different societies and different this and different that. I said, so the Gemara doesn't know what it's talking about when it talks about women. Right. It's not really in touch with reality. Right. So what do you want to learn it for? Now, those are not definitive answers, I would like to point out. That does not answer the question. You understand? But it helps the person realize that they don't understand what they're asking, which is 9/10 of the battle. I've always said this in the past. The most important phrase you can pick up when you're answering questions is, what do you mean? I was asked to, I don't remember when I tell these stories or where I am, but I was invited to speak for the Shabbat Olami in Leeds. This must have been 1995. I was sitting in for the chief rabbi. The chief rabbi was supposed to go because Leeds has the biggest Shabbat Olami, but he decided to go to the 50th anniversary of VE Day, of the end of World War II, and he couldn't make it. So I told the queen, listen, I'm not going to be able to come. I'll go to Leeds instead. So I stood in for the chief rabbi. And at lunch, this fellow said to me, if the chief rabbi came, I wouldn't have come to the Shabbaton. I said, really? He says, yeah, because the chief rabbi doesn't like progressive Jews, and I'm a progressive Jew. What do you think about progressive Jews? So I said, I don't know. What is progressive Judaism? Is it like reform? He says, no. Is it like conservative? No. Well, what is it? Anyway, over the course of this 10-minute conversation, he realized he doesn't have any idea what progressive Judaism is, other than the fact that he knows he is one, and he doesn't like the chief rabbi because he doesn't like them. And I was fine because I had no opinion on progressive Jewry, nor do I to this day. You understand? So, like I say, very often, you just need to define the question. So, having said that, I have, like I say, there's many, many more points to make. I am fascinating. And I teach in Ohr HaGolah every week for an hour, and I have never in the past 7 years finished my entire syllabus because of how fascinating I am. So there's a lot more to say. But like I say, I'm cutting things down because I would like to open the opportunity for people to ask questions so you can actually see how you try to answer them, right? And therefore, I have worked, and I think everybody has to do this, that you have to be able to answer every basic question for yourself. You either have to have a good answer or a story that has nothing to do with the question but is interesting. I've mastered both approaches. Okay, at this point, as they say in Parshas Korach, I'd like to throw open the floor. And if anyone has... One of the people running the program said, I think the people have been sitting for too long. They need a 10-minute break. I said, don't worry. I'll give them the 10-minute break. Anyway, so I throw open the floor. If there are any questions, I will do the best I can to try to provide you with how I would answer it. Ki'ilu, you were not a firm person or, if you were, like I say, not hostile. I don't answer hostile questions. You understand? Make the distinction between understanding what is a question, what is an answer. Right? The famous story with Chaim Volozhin. You know the story? Good. Yes. Someone did that to me once. He said, you know the story with the Chafetz Chaim? I said, sure. That's not the best. One second. I just have to tell you. There's a famous story with Yitzchak Elchanan, where Yitzchak Elchanan was trying to get this boy out of the army, Yankel. So finally he's been trying, and he's in the middle of Shir, and a bacher rushes in and says, Rebbe, he says, Yankel got out of the army. He says, oh, Baruch Hashem, thank you for telling me right away. It's a big load off my mind. He goes on with Shir. 10 minutes later, another bacher comes in. He says, Rebbe, I wanted to tell you, Yankel got out of the army. He says, oh, Baruch Hashem, thank you so much for telling me. It's a big weight off my shoulders. Then he leaves, and he says, Rebbe, you know already. He says, I know, but he didn't know, and I didn't want to make him feel bad. So he wanted to tell it, So I was someplace and somebody starts to say, he says, so it's a musical con, and the guy says, yeah. Did we reach all the corners? Just for that time? Sometimes I watch a story move around the room. It's fascinating. Anyway. Okay. Yes. Excellent. If someone asks you a question on science and Torah and you're not really familiar, what do you say? I don't know. Interesting question. Don't try to bluff subjects you don't know. You will get caught, and then you will look silly. And then the Torah will look silly. There is nothing wrong with saying the following. I don't know. That's a good question. Let's go ask Rabbi Gottlieb. You understand? He knows all about Torah and science. And then the guy will say, that's okay, I didn't care that much. 9 out of 10 times. You know what I'm saying? Occasionally there might be someone who says, okay. But don't try to answer things you don't know about. You'll end up saying something you don't know. One of my tapes, I misspoke. It wasn't that I didn't know. I made a mistake. I was referring to the famous geneticist Mendel, and I instead referred to Mendelssohn. And there was somebody who listened to the tape and said, he was the founder of Reform. That's not the same. I said, I know, I made a mistake. You understand? I misspoke. It wasn't a question of that. One time I mixed up Elisha and Eliyahu, you know what I mean, on a tape. It happened to be an absolutely brilliant shiur. It was absolutely brilliant. I listened to my own tapes because they're really the most fascinating ones out there. And one of the advantages of having a poor memory, you know, when you get to be my age, you know, they say the first thing to go is the memory. The second thing is, anyway, so I don't remember what I said, and I listen to the shiur, and I say, wow, that's really fascinating stuff, you know. But it happened to be a great shiur, and afterwards, this guy who brought his father, who's very brilliant, came over to me and said, you confused Elisha and Eliyahu. And that was it. That's all he walked away with. So, you know, like I say, you know, a small mistake will sometimes take people's attention away. So here, if you don't really know science, and you're going to try to bluff your way through, zelokadai. Yeah. Oh, one second, a follow-up to that. So if they say that to me, and they never do, but if they say that, so then I say, do you take aspirin when you have a headache? So they say, no, I take Tylenol. Okay, excellent. I take Advil. You know, fine. You know, they say, okay, do you know how that works? Do you know why that makes your headache go away? No? Then how could you take a drug without understanding how it works? And if he does, then keep throwing out things, you know? Do you know how an automobile works? Could you build an automobile? If I throw all the parts, could you build an automobile? You don't understand how an automobile works and you're riding one? That's a car, by the way. You know? So, you know, you ride one, you know how it works? You go into a 747, that thing is very, very heavy, and you're going up in the sky with it, maybe it'll crash. How do you know it stays up? Can you give me the formula for the thrust to height? You know, ratio and like all that stuff they did in high school that nobody paid attention to? You know what I mean? Does anyone know why we need a cosine? I've never heard a cogent explanation to that yet, or a tangent. Anyway, but, you know, I remember when I was taking trigonometry, I asked the teacher, I said, what do we need this for? He goes, in case you need to land an airplane. I said, if they need me to land an airplane, I said, we should be learning now to heal them. That's what we should be doing. You know? They're going to need me to take out my graph and start plotting the, you know, forget about it, just jump out now. Anyway, yes, sir. I'm sorry, you have to say that slower.
Somebody says, I know too much about Judaism, which is why I'm not from.
I know too much about Judaism, that's why I'm not from?
Yeah, well, the guy says,
I would say, what do you mean?
I'm just saying, yeah, a regular guy goes day school, you know, yeshiva, anything. And he knows all the, you know, like, he puts whatever is positive and negative, you know, sort of thing.
So,
my job is.
I'll tell you an idea from every left. I'll tell you an idea from every left, you know. He pointed out once that Shimon bar Yochai comes out of the Maor and he starts looking around and everybody starts bursting the flames. So Kodesh Baruch tells him, go back into the cave, right? Go back into the cave. So you think, my goodness, the reason he's burning people up is because he spent all this time in the cave learning Torah. That's where you send him back? So Relev says, you find that when there's a problem, it's because of too little Torah, not too much Torah. So a person who tells me I know everything already, I always say, really, how many times have you finished Shas? You know? I did this one time when I was at an encounter group in Cape Town, South Africa. I was the only faculty member who, after the first class, had not managed to alienate the entire group. And that's because instead of dealing with the burning issues like everyone else did, I told interesting stories. So, which kept me out of trouble. So, at the end, I said, listen, I ran NCSY in Long Island for 9 years. I understand youth work. You know, we cannot sit here at the faculty table. They're understaffed. We have to go and mingle with the kids. And everyone was like horrified with the kids. You know, and like I said, yeah, don't worry. How bad can it be, you know? So the next meal, I mingled. Everybody else watched me. And they came back afterwards and said, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, but, you know, were you just sitting there with that group of kids learning Masilas Yesharim? I said, yeah. Because somehow I asked them, what do you like to do? They said they were watching movies. I said, what movies are you into? They said, The Matrix. You know, and I said, really, what do you find fascinating about this? Well, maybe your dreams are reality, about your dreams. You know? I said, that's exactly, Masilas Yesharim says that in Perek Gimel. You know what I mean? This world's an illusion. You think you see things, you really don't. It's like you see this, etc. They said, what are you talking about? I pulled it out. I started showing them Perek Gimel. They were absolutely fascinated. So everybody took a deep breath and jumped in, you know. Anyway, there was this really group of anti-negative kids who were off to the side. So I saw everybody was avoiding them. So I said, okay, fools tread where wise men dare not go. You know what I mean? So I pull in, I sit down, and they are studiously avoiding me. All sitting there eating their burwurst, For those of you who haven't been to South Africa, that's like Frankfurt is with nuclear radiation, Boerwurst, you know what I mean? And they're all sitting there avoiding me. I don't care, I'm sitting there, you know. And eventually one guy turns to me and says, Rabbi, tell me, what do you think of us? I said, me? He said, yeah, you guys are pathetic. Now, don't try this at home, boys and girls, as Mr. Wizard used to say, okay? Obviously, if you know what you're doing, sometimes confrontation shakes people up. The Sandler sales system says that one of the yesodos are, always get a no instead of a maybe. A maybe means, yeah, I don't know, and they brush you away. Understand? Get a no. People don't want to give a no, and it forces them to think. I said, you guys are pathetic. I said, what do you mean? Because you don't know anything. You know absolutely nothing. You think you have a Jewish education. You know absolutely nothing. You know, and I'll be shocked if you marry Jewish, but certainly your kids won't. So what are you talking about? You know, we have Friday night supper with the family. I was like, whoa, very impressive. What are you like, sing the Chododi or something? You know, you do the Shalom Aleichem. Shalom Aleichem. You think that gives you anything of Judaism? How many volumes of Talmud have you finished? Did you ever finish Chumash and Rashi? Have you ever gone through it? And anyway, so because this one guy is getting really angry and fighting with me, so everybody now likes me because everyone likes a fight. You know what I mean? So they're all like, oh, you know? Anyway, by the end, these guys all became my good friends, you know? And the point that I kept driving home to them is, you don't know. You don't know. You know? Parents tell me after a kid has graduated day school, if they've spent a year learning in Israel, sometimes they want to come back for a second year. And parents say, 1 year is more than enough. I said, but they don't know enough about Judaism. You know, they don't know enough Torah. So he says, well, they went to Yeshiva High School, and that's enough of an education. I said, so you're going to send them for 1 year of college? I said, why? He said, well, they had a high school education. So everyone knows you don't learn anything in high school. I said, listen to what you're saying. You understand? When it comes to their Judaism, high school is more than enough. When it comes to real life, you don't learn anything in high school. I know this for a fact. Most of the things that I learned in high school will only help you if you end up on a game show. Understand? And I'm talking about a good game show. I don't even mean like a portion of the game show. You know what I mean? I always do this with, you know, when the kids come across the first year, I say, do you know what Malfigian tubules are? Yeah. Anyway. Now, who knows who lost the election for president in 1868? You know what I mean? I mean, it's stuff like this. This is the kind of stuff that we spend hours and hours memorizing, remembering, and immediately forgetting. You know? So, but when it comes to Judaism, so what do? You picked up some minor facts. You don't know anything about it. And the more I impress upon them this, yeah, in fact, on this I will move to a different question, which you're not asking, but has a similar answer. It's a very difficult question. What do you do with a person who's thinking of intermarrying? Now, as a rule, these people know very little about Judaism. So if you try to impress upon them the importance of their Judaism, they say, yeah, but I don't care about that. I don't care about that. So I tell them the following marshal. This is what I use, and I found it to be very effective. But the message is only one thing. Yeah? I say, you know, if you're Jewish today, it probably means that you had two Jewish parents, four grandparents, eight great-grandparents, 16, 32, 64, 128. So you didn't go back too far in time until you had 128 ancestors. 256, 512, you know, 1024, 2048. You go back a little bit more, you're dealing with thousands of ancestors. Thousands of people who decided to be Jewish, or you wouldn't be here today as a Jew. You might be here as a Christian, but you wouldn't be here today as a Jew. Yeah? Now, when grandparents pass away, so one of the things you have to do is clean out the house. You want to sell the house, and grandparents tend to hold on to a lot of stuff. There's a lot of boxes. So you got to clean out the attic. So there's two things you can do. You get a big dumpster, and you take all the boxes and throw it out. Or you can go through the boxes. It takes a much longer amount of time. But when you do, you find collectibles, you find antiques, you know, sometimes stocks and bonds, sometimes jewelry. It happens every day. I know people make a living of this. They just go to old houses and they, you know, they say, I'll give you $500 right now, I'll just take all the old stuff. And they know, they make a fortune. Every day, people are finding a fortune, and every day, people are throwing a fortune in the garbage. It just depends if they take enough time to open up the box. I said, if you're here today as a Jew, there were thousands of people who had to remain Jewish for you to be a Jew. I said, you know what that takes? You know what that was? You ever read Jewish history? It means you were going to suffer discrimination and anti-Semitism and abuse and you know, and physical violence and expulsion and death. And thousands of people made that choice for one reason, to pass down to you this thing called Judaism.
And they all were willing to live these difficult lives just to give this box to you. Now, maybe they were all a bunch of dummies. Maybe they know something you don't know. But I propose that before you throw that box in the garbage, you take the time to open it up and look inside. And I say, if you're going to intermarry, the odds of your children being Jewish are very slight. So before you make that decision and throw that box in the garbage, I said, take the time to look inside. Take off 6 months and study in Israel. If I can't get 6 months, I say take 3 months. If I can't get 3 months, I say 6 weeks. If I can't get that, I say 2 weeks. Something. Because I know that the more people learn, the more they are committed. The conservative movement did a study in the 80s, and they found that of 100 kids in a conservative congregation, 3 will become Orthodox, 17 will become Reform, 30 will remain conservative, and 50 will disassimilate. Disaffiliate. And they found the people who go to the Orthodox are the most learned in the conservative movement. And the people who move more to the right are the ones who know more. The more you know, the more likely you are to stay. Yes, sir?
Why are firm Jews so insular?
Because the society around us is so terrible. It's really very easy. You know, you take a look at the world around us today. Don't take a look at the world around us today. And you find that things that there are people who don't listen to the radio. I used to think perhaps they were a tad extreme. You know what I mean? And I went to America and I had my kids in the car. I had to keep turning off. I used to listen to the radio just to get the traffic reports because they keep changing in New York, you know. You have to see if you're going to this bridge or that bridge, you know. And you're always trying to beat out the crowds and they're all chasing you. You know what I mean? Like, you know, it's like there's an art form to it, you know. So this one has, in 10 minutes you can listen to 4 different, you know, traffic reports if you time it just right, you know. Anyway, I had to keep turning off the radio. The news was filled with absolutely filthy, disgusting things and they were talking about the President of the United States. You know what I mean? Not to mention the other stories that were there. Every story was something that was actually absolutely horrific that I don't want my kids being exposed to. You know? It's something that's terrible. And what's on TV and what's on the radio and what's in the magazines and what's in the newspapers? I mean, Weinbach once said to me once, because I remember reading an article in Time magazine before it was pornographic. You know? And I know exactly what he means. Because there's got to be at least one inappropriate picture, sometimes two. At least. As well as the stories of what we call news today. So when we Orthodox Jews tend to insulate ourselves, it's because there's a lot of bad out there. And so, my friends, we're out of time. I don't mean mamash out of time. Mitzvah Hashem, we still have some more. But I'm out of time in this forum. And so I leave you just with the thought that I always do, and that is that at the end of the day, Kodesh Baruch Hu is the one who's going to bring back Klal Yisrael. All we have to do is, as Ramesha said, not get in the way. We have to be as prepared as we can for ourselves to understand the questions, to ourselves to understand the answers. And then as much as we do, then Amir Tzah Hashem will be able to do it. And this is the single most important point. As much as people look at you and see that you are secure, you are happy, you are positive, that is the greatest challenge to their lifestyle. I've had people say to me, Bezeil Lushin, you're the biggest challenge to my secular lifestyle. I said, really, which class? They said, it's none of your classes. I don't listen when you talk. I said, then what is it? They said, I can't believe that you're living this religious lifestyle, and it's restrictive, and I know all the stuff that you can't do, and I'm living this free lifestyle, and I can do whatever I want, but I can't help but feel that you're having more fun in life than I am. I said, kills you, doesn't it? And he said, yeah, loser. I said, of course. I said, that's why I'm doing it. It's a better lifestyle than anything they have out there. And you can't say it. They have to see it. And if they see that sense of happiness and contentment and reality inside, you know, when you're in Orla Gala, one of the guys says, Rabbi Alasky, I can give you answers, but I can't do that little laugh you do at the end. You know what I mean? That's what's so devastating. I said, the little laugh at the end is only devastating because what it means is I really believe what I'm saying. And if you really believe what you're saying and you look it over and you understand it and you get the answers for yourself, then Amir Tzah Hashem, you're in a position to give it over to other people. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu will allow us to have a chelek in the tremendous nisim that are taking place today.